nowadays finding my own voice in my food, I combine a lot of those two different cuisines, which is a lot of French-driven technique, sauce making, different type of how to develop flavor, and throw it in with Japanese technique and different ingredients.
Thank you for joining us here on the Austin All Day Podcast. Chef Arturo, Chef Michael.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah man, thanks.
Yeah. Yes. Cheers, fellas. Coughing, AM pod. This won't air at this time, but we're just off of Valentine's Day. So you guys both in the, well, you're private chef in it.
I am, yeah.
So that's, I'm sure, a very popular holiday as it is for you, right? So you were... You were busy last night, is what you were saying?
Yeah, we did a pop-up at Fierce Whiskers.
Okay.
15 courses. It was pretty cool.
And pop-ups is something y'all are about to do.
So that, yeah, that's a...
Like a collaboration. What brings the two of you together?
So we're... I'm starting a project called Distrito.
Okay.
And Michael reached out. He owning Tari, and I've followed him for a while now.
Which is at... Austin Sake or Texas Sake?
So Texas Sushi Co. is at Texas Sake in the yard. And Tare is a restaurant we're opening in North Austin. So right now it's in-home dining, private events, pop-ups. That's where this kind of came along. We're doing private events at Texas Sake. And that's where, you know, Wednesdays we'll do dinners, we'll do different things, invite people out. But I think for the most part, Tare is eventually going to become a 10-seat sushi bar. Which is building out. I had meetings this morning with the architect and builders and things. So,
I mean, very cool, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, when I think of something like that intimate, like, you know, there's only so many seats setting, I think of what was happening at Bento Picnic.
Right.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
The sushi bar ATX.
Is that what it is? Sushi bar? And that's very popular, right?
Super
popular. He was showing me like what you're kind of doing over there now. And right now it's four seats, right?
Yeah, right now only four seats. So it's
so
pretty crazy.
So is it like backlogged? Like how do you get a ticket to that?
So it's pretty much all word of mouth.
Yeah.
Everybody that's been there, everyone that's come to like, yeah. So everyone that's kind of been there, or people that come in and drink sake, we start talking and they're like, oh yeah, you know, we've been here, we're new in town. Dude. Come check this out. Yeah. And then like, how do you book? And it locks in the book like really quickly. But for the most part, I mean, from private dining, we've been in hundreds of houses. People on our mailing list, we just send it out and we don't expect it to fill up every weekend because that like aspect right now, because we have the truck up front, small sushi bar, we want people to still be able to feel like they're getting to know our food as we develop into a restaurant.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what is better than that? You're having some drinks, and through the grapevine, you hear you can have this amazing meal.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good experience. So, I kind of like that. So, private chefing, you guys are both into that, too.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So, are you from here, Chef Michael?
I'm from Corpus area, a town called Sinton. Yeah.
So, you are from Texas. You are from Mexico.
I'm from Mexico City.
And you guys have... I'd like to dig into a little bit of your history, but as of now, you guys are both Distrito, and you guys are going to do a collaboration dinner?
Correct. So we're going to kind of take over Austin Sake.
Texas Sake.
And 10 seats. We're going to do a menu over 10 courses.
Yeah.
We've invited a couple friends and that have like a following, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And we just want to showcase the food.
I'm sure the invitation is in the mail. No worries.
Oh, yeah. And
so that's the goal, though, is to kind of like get the word out there. This is what we're up to.
Exactly. And start getting pictures of the food and the experience that this whole project it's going to be all about. Because I think that Michael and I have... really similar goals with the 10-seat, really intimate.
So that's what place. Distrito will be as well?
Yes. Yeah, so right now, Distrito is a project, what's mostly called underground dining experience, which means right now as a private chef, I go out, say, to your home, I make dinner for you and your guests.
Right.
Now, with an underground dining experience, you will be coming over to my place, to my home, and you will be sitting at my table. And the premise of the whole experience is to have dinner with strangers. And
I love that.
So that way you're going to be meeting people and coming together for the kind of same purpose of having a good time, having really good food.
That's like the next level up from being like a foodie who goes out to like the hottest restaurant or right. goes to try collaborations. It's like, no. This is a little bit different. Like we're going to a house.
Exactly.
There's only, 10 seats.
Because if you go to a restaurant, I mean, you have a great experience. It's just hard to...
Hopefully.
Right.
Depends on the restaurant.
But you're never really talking to other people there. It'll be weird to kind of like, reach out and...
That is true.
How's your day going?
Right.
But with this, it's forcing everybody to talk about the food, talk about what they do and what they're into, and while having a really cool, exciting time with great food.
Also, they're just like, I'm in the chef's house. Like, exactly. This is cool. I got invited to be here.
100%. Yeah. So I would have to think that, like, in order to make that profitable, unless it's a passion project, like, the tickets have to be pretty expensive, right? Or, like, how does that work for you guys?
At least, and I mean, I don't know your Chef Michael's prices, but it'd be a more top of the line fine dining type of experience.
I think naturally, with what you're serving and making, you would already be paying a premium price. But for the experience, right?
Because of the type of ingredients, the number of courses, like the vision is to have 9 to 12 different courses, mm-hmm. small bites, that kind of thing, and being able to enjoy different flavors in one sitting instead of just having kind of like a 2 to 4 course menu, which is also something cool. But this is going to be like that next level. That
it's like tasting style.
Exactly. Right? Just like a tasting menu.
Change style. All the time. I'm just
seasonal. Assuming. Yeah. Working with different farms. Right now, I love to work with a House Barn farm.
Okay.
I buy a lot of their product.
What's it called?
House Barn. Farm on the east side?
I don't know if I've heard of House Barn.
Dorsey, House Bar, it's just on Go Valley. Like, it's really cool, small, like, really awesome farm.
I know they're all out there on the east side. And we've had some, like, we've had Farmhouse on here. And our first sponsor was actually Johnson's Backyard Garden. Mm. But, like, I guess I'm kind of out of the loop. But that is the farm space. But you're working with them right now. It's always nice to have a good farm to work with.
Yeah, they have amazing product, always in rotation. The greens right now are absolutely amazing, super tasty.
Yeah.
I had some radishes yesterday, and you can eat them just whole, and they're so good.
Totally. So, this, I mentioned the sushi bar, right? That was at Bento Picnic.
Yes.
But is there anything else like this? Because you guys are both doing similar type things. Eventually you will be.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's one at Native Hostel
called really?
Toshokan.
Okay, yeah.
And Sane there is doing a really amazing job. Mm-hmm. He's created this experience where you go behind a bookshelf. You go into this... You have to go into Native, then you walk to the back, go to this bookshelf.
Like behind a bookshelf door, a private door. That's cool.
Yeah. And so then you go into this small little, I think he said 6 people. I think there were 6 when we went to the reservation. And it's cool, man. He's playing guitar, showing you his passion for what he's doing and going through course after course after course. I mean, something to sit there for like an hour and every 5 minutes get to try something new.
Yeah, that's what I'm in the business of.
Yeah.
I just want to go eat good food.
Exactly.
I mean, like, so Native Hostels is also like this cool experience in itself, right? That's a cool. So also, I mean, randomly, we are Ranch Rider Spirits. Have you guys heard of?
I've definitely drank a couple.
Yeah. They started with their food truck way back when called Ranch Hand, which is now across the street at Native Hostels. And it was like 2 college students, but it's just kind of
nice.
That's how I got to like familiar with that, what they're doing over there with that live music. I mean, crazy stuff was happening with the pandemic, but they've since like sold off the trailer and they're doing the Ranch Rider Spirits. You guys are both going home with Ranch Rider Spirits, so don't worry, you'll get to try those out. But definitely good stuff, and they're just like launching a new flavor, I think passion fruit, yeah. But good stuff. But Native Hostels is another spot they do that. Yeah. I'm sure it's like happening in other,
there's,
I think like California, Austin, right? You probably hear
California,
like
yeah. New York. Big cities. Chicago has a lot of this style of restaurants.
Like Jiro James of Sushi, like that?
Which one?
The Jiro Dreams of Sushi?
Oh, yeah. Over in Japan.
Am I saying?
Yeah. No, that's totally
correct. It's been a minute since I've seen that. But that's like what I think of.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Because there's like only X amount of seats. Yes. You're going to make what? I mean, he's not open all day long. Like
exactly.
Slanging sushi. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple of restaurants like that here in Austin. I think one of my absolute favorites is Pasta Bar.
Okay.
That it's owned by the same people that own Sushi by Scratch.
But that's pasta?
So it's an Italian, Japanese kind of style tasting menu restaurant.
Yeah, that's an interesting mashup.
Yeah. And the chefs are pretty amazing. I'm good friends with Chef Jeremy there. He's the head chef.
Nice.
He's really good. So envisioning kind of something like that, where it's 10 seats, tasting menu. I mean, Chef Michael's already doing something really similar with his pop-up.
And how does it compare to what you've previously done in your career to do this like more intimate, I'm sure, can only imagine, it's probably pretty nice.
Yeah, so I mean, I've worked at like Uchi, and we're doing like, you know, 300 covers a night. And
the red one? The
Little Red House?
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing a bunch of sushi, and then kind of went in between doing private events, and then private events got smaller and it got more intimate, and then it just became more fun. Like there was things that, like, you know, when you're just sending food out to people, you don't get the interaction, you don't get to see if they liked it, you don't get to like talk to them, you know what I mean?
And even Uchi, that is like a pretty intimate kind of setting. You could probably still spot them across the dining room, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, you could see everybody, but it's loud in there, yeah.
Right.
But I think going from doing smaller private events kind of took it to like, okay, I want to do like an omakase. Because we did like sushi for like, you know, 30 people, and it was only us doing it. Everybody was coming around, eating, kind of, you know, catered event. And from there, it just got smaller, more compact, more condensed. Like the food got better, the rice got better, the ingredients we were using, we just kept sourcing things that were the best. And I worked at a fish purveyor as well.
Here
in Austin.
What was the purveyor?
Minamoto.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I worked there for a little bit. You know, just cut some fish, did some things. And
was that like strategic? Like I want to get my hands dirty and work on this side of the business too?
Yeah, I got to work within the fish department. So I broke down tuna, halibut, things that were going to all the restaurants in town.
Right.
And then from there, we opened up Salty Cargo.
Okay.
I opened that up with some other people, and that closed during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And at that time, I was also doing Artare dinners as well. And those were just private. At that time, during the pandemic, we were going to houses for two people.
Yeah.
So it was just me doing sushi at their house for them, hanging out.
Well, that was like the private kind of chef, the home during the pandemic, like mm-hmm. that was the time, right? I mean, like right. we saw what food delivered and like to go things, but also like if you wanted to eat and have a nice meal, you needed to invite the chef to your house.
Correct.
So business was more or less booming, right?
I mean, on my side, definitely. It was nice. You know, got to see really cool houses, really awesome places that I never would have thought to have been.
Like, up at the lake, you're like filming the place. Yeah. You're like, look at this, look at that.
Pretty.
I mean, maybe really cool maybe houses, you weren't. Yeah. Never mind. I'll edit that out. No. There's some videos out there that shouldn't be out there. But, you know, like that is like, if anybody's been to Uchi, and many people have, especially if they're probably listening to this, and they've gotten the tasting menu, it's an incredible experience. And if you take that on a more intimate scale, like what you're doing, that's a selling point. It's like sushi to your home, or I mean, like here with just four people. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, on my side, I always worked fine dining through my whole career. It was always
not in Austin, or where did, so we're in Mexico.
I started in Mexico City. I worked for one of the biggest names in the pastries
okay.
in Mexico, doing a lot of chocolate. And then from there, kind of evolved into fine dining places in Mexico City. And then got a job offer over in Park City, Utah, over at one of the best resorts, Montage, Deer Valley. And then that's when that was kind of like my bridge over to the U.S. from Mexico. I came over on a visa and worked at fine dining restaurants, mostly French, and then transitioned into Japanese, which wasn't something really that was, it wasn't really on my radar.
Right.
I wanted to stay traditional, keep it going on the French kind of route.
Can I back you up really
yes.
quick before? So we're talking about kind of like the what style of cooking you were doing before the transition, but how did you get into cooking in the first place?
It's funny. I never cooked in my life. I didn't know how to do scrambled eggs.
Was mom and dad cooking?
Nothing. No one in my family.
Really?
Will. I mean, my dad liked to cook sometime, but right. it wasn't. He had a 9-to-5 office job. And
so
I mean,
random reason?
I lived in Canada for high school, and I took a cooking class up there. And that kind of sparked an interest in the restaurant industry, but I...
Wait, in high school?
I did high school in Vancouver, Canada.
Did you have cooking classes in high school?
I mean, it was like a class that we did different things in. And when, I mean, remember one time cooking like a steak, but right. nothing like...
But this is a dedicated intense. Class?
Yeah, Canadian like educational program is really neat. I mean, I remember being able to choose from over like 96 different eligible classes up yeah. there. And that, because the way that it works, they start you off from high school to transition into university. And you can't really get into university programs if you didn't take high school classes. So if you wanted to go to business school, you should be taking business classes. That was the path that I wanted to take originally.
Right.
So I took entrepreneurship class. I took business, marketing.
So was there a goal with a culinary class to go into like a culinary
I just
school?
Took it because I thought it was going to be fun and
I just
going to have
that
food.
It was available to you because right. I didn't have that. Yeah. It was not heard of yeah. at all. And then I've heard from some people that they, like there was a guy, I can't remember right now, but like it was like he wasn't doing great. And so they suggested, hey, here's a culinary class. And I was like, that's exactly right. Like the right. guys who aren't doing great need to be introduced because like they're most likely
this was
some
all,
of them yeah. going to end up in a kitchen because they can more or less fuck around a little bit
right.
yeah. in their yeah. personal lives. And of course, it's disciplined, but it's a whole different kind of ball. You know what I mean? There's
yes.
like a certain person, a stereotype who
exactly.
ends up there.
Yeah, no, this was all eligible. I mean, I remember taking photography too. Mm-hmm.
But you, that was the spark?
It was a little bit of that. And then that kind of like sparked the interesting part of me on the restaurant side.
Yeah.
So I finished high school, go back to Mexico for business school. And I tell my dad that I'm really interested in the restaurant industry.
And what's that like in Mexico? Like, because now here in the States, it's like, I guess more or less like a normal kind of thing to
right.
get into.
Yeah. Well, back in Mexico, it's, or at least back then, this is 13, 14 years ago. And I mean, first of all, my parents were always super skeptical because I never.
Of the culinary world?
Of the whole, yeah, of my interest in the culinary
well,
world.
Probably because they were like, where did this come
exactly.
from?
Exactly. Right? They've never seen me cook like anything. So they were like, what are you talking about?
Right.
So then my dad suggested, why don't you go to culinary school mm-hmm. for cooking only, Cordon Bleu in Mexico City.
Oh.
And the program that they ran in Mexico, it was the same one that they run over in France where it's only cooking. You go in there for 6 hours and the only thing that you do is cook. You don't take finance. You don't take any of the other classes. You don't touch front of the house.
And that's like a year. And you can choose longer, but it's the standard is about a year.
The program takes about 9 months.
Right, okay.
For, say, savory side and then 9 months for pastry.
Okay.
You can do it a little bit faster if you take the express kind of class during the summer. So that's what kind of what I did. So it took me 7 months each side.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of did a similar thing here in Austin with the same Le Cordon Bleu program. Yeah.
Before they closed
up. Yeah, before that shut down.
So was it always at the Domain? There was another one, right?
There was two at the same location. So it was something else before it was Le Cordon Bleu.
Right.
But it was the same building.
Yeah. I mean, there's a handful of people, and we have what, Escoffier here?
Yes.
Isn't there another school?
I mean, ACC has a culinary program as well. I don't know how both of those go. I mean, I feel like they're more driven towards, like he was saying, like finance, like, you know, learning things about the business side of it as well. It's more of like an associate program type of thing. Where, I mean, the one I went to here in Austin was just a certificate, and it was just cooking. Like, health, all this stuff.
Were you, like, family? Was everybody cooking? What prompted you to get in
there? I mean, my family always cooked, but... let's see.
So then what's your favorite go-to from like when mom, we were coming in dirty from playing and the sun was setting and your mom like had something or your dad had something on the table?
It was more so like my grandparents and stuff that we spent a lot of time with.
Even better.
So my grandma, I mean, tamales were always available. Sunday, like menudo was available. Like, you know, just the simple like potatoes and egg in the morning. My grandpa would get up and make tacos. Like I remember going to school with tacos that they would... that were made, were warm, like that's made great. From there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just that, those simple things. But the cooking aspect was always something we just were surrounded by. I mean, as far as like growing up hunting and fishing, you know, you're killing something, you're respecting the whole thing, taking it, like cooking it, not just doing nothing with anything. So,
well, that is like skipped. And, you know, many people who don't get that experience, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great way to get into cooking, to see it from the ground up.
And I mean, from there, just kind of like needed to make some money in college and went to work in a kitchen and was dishwashing and friends were working there and it was fun and stopped going to college and kept going to kitchens.
Really?
Yeah.
So you started traditional college?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. And then, so you were cooking. Well, when did you go to culinary school?
In 2014. Too long ago.
Oh, wow. So it closed. What did Le Cordon, and sadly, Le Cordon Bleu is closed. And like the whole nation, or worldwide, right?
I think just all of America.
Oh, just the U.S.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yes. So it's still Mexico and then in France and everywhere.
Yeah. There's interesting. Like 35 different countries.
Yeah. The hope would be that they forgave all the student loans. That would have been the only, right? They're like, you got
I'll let you know. Right. when they do.
So 2014, and then they have a, what is it called? Like it's externship type deal where you have to like work
in a kitchen. Yeah.
Yeah. But what is that called?
Externship.
Oh, it is called. So where did you end up working?
So I was cooking at a, like a hibachi restaurant.
Okay.
So I learned how to do the teppanyaki, cook the steak, the choo-choo train, you know, all the corny jokes.
Did you, and obviously you're going to school, but like you knew you were going to want to, you had a passion for it.
I think as soon as I started working in the kitchen and I moved to New Braunfels, because I was going to school in Belton, Texas. And from there, when I started working in the kitchens there, I was like, you know, moved down to New Braunfels area and just started working in kitchens. And it wasn't like something I fell in love with, but particularly like just started doing.
Right.
And over time, it was like, oh, I can buy better knives. Oh, I can get better at this. It was like always a goal to like meet. And it was like, This is cool. And just was fun.
I'm sure there could be a whole sub podcast here about knives with you.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, which, you know, is usually like something I steer clear of because I feel like I'll lose a lot of people. But you guys are into Japanese style and like the knives are incredible.
Yes.
And it's obviously a rabbit hole, but there's steels, there's handles.
I think we can both probably attest to that. Ninohi Ninox is probably one of the better knives. Yes. I mean, I saw his knife kit.
So commercial, like if you want to get your foot in the door, because you can get down the rabbit hole if you're going to different makers. Exactly. Like, you know, direct from Japan. It's going to be 3 months. You know, it's like you picked whatever. I mean, I don't know if you've done all that, but
the custom and
yeah. And even when it's that, it's still just a normal like wah handle, but like you had to wait for that guy to make it.
Exactly.
But so in foot in the door, if you want to get something good and reliable, it's what the Inox what?
Well, Nohi Ninox is like. That's top tier. That's like the Bugatti of knives. Okay. It's crazy. All
right, cool.
Like I think if you're like getting
really Bugatti of knives, like that.
They can get up there. Like I got a custom one for $1,700. Yes. Like left-handed, you know, the steel, and I could have made it more expensive if I wanted it to have been.
Do you know how many people? So you're lefty. How crazy that number sounds like for a knife. Like how many people could never justify that, but. Well, how has it helped you in your life?
I mean, edge retention, the way it is. Like, I mean,
because also that will save you time in sharpening.
Also, the places I've worked had like knife programs, so I didn't have to pay the whole knife all at once.
Yeah.
I got to pay it over time. Oh, and that's how I've gotten.
Were you a lucky robot?
No, so Uchi did the same thing. I got like most of my Ninoxes. Because Ninoxes, like for a petty knife or a Gyuto, are $200 to $700.
Yeah.
And working in kitchens,
$200 it's if you get it on sale.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's like the smallest, you know, like the petty. So it's
I love that they had a program for it.
Yeah. Five paychecks. I mean, we do it at our food truck for the guys. They all got Ninoxes. And I was like, hey.
And is there ever a time where somebody's not paying a knife off? That's like constant, right? Because like if you have that option, you're like, I'll do it.
I mean, they do it once a year at Uchi. So I was like, yeah, every year. I was there for like, I think 3 years. It was like two or three knives and then you just pay it off over.
That's awesome.
So I'm sure you were familiar with Metier before it closed.
Oh, yeah. That place was awesome.
It was. And but we don't really have a place, right?
There's nothing around here.
Because like people would think naturally without really knowing, well, Williams-Sonoma or... what's the Sur La Table?
Yeah, know, right.
That's where they would think, oh, you go get it soon. It's like super nice. Like, no. We're and talking about something else right now.
It's funny because when you, at least when I've gone to in New Orleans, they have a shop called Contelier.
Yeah, I've heard it. I've seen the website.
Yeah. Then San Francisco has Bernal Cutlery.
Okay.
Yeah.
New York has Corin.
Yeah.
So when you go,
why is everywhere have somewhere, but we don't?
Exactly. And they ask when I've told them, like, at Austin, we don't have anything. They're like, what?
I mean, that's true. Rodriguez Butcher, I think, but in San Antonio.
Like San Antonio. Yeah.
And they have knives like that.
But they still have, I feel like, well, I haven't actually been in there, but I would assume, I don't know why I'm thinking this, but that they have all kinds of crap in there too.
Yeah, so I bought a vacuum sealer from there. Like they have,
but like kitchen you're not going to get that like Corin.
Not like Metier. Like, it's not like a Metier experience or a Corin experience. Like it's not a.
We need that. We need that because really we have like. I mean, because the reason you know when I asked. I mean, we kind of went all over the place, but like the fine dining, there's not a lot of fine dining here. I mean, we have places like I would throw like the steakhouses or Trulux where like you're going to want to dress up and like obviously, but like you can more or less go anywhere. Like fine dining, I think there's like a dress code. You want to wear like a jacket or something. And
there's definitely not. San Francisco, New York, fine dining.
Which is kind of what makes Austin, you know, people, that's why it's good, too.
I love that,
It's chill, You can do whatever you want.
And it's coming. I mean, this wave, I mean, at least with what Chef Michael, what I'm trying to do here is just bring that style of cooking, you know, closer to the people here in Austin that have that experience back in Chicago, New York, San Francisco, where there's Michelin star places. And they want to have that kind of experience here in Austin where it's their home.
Yeah.
So bringing that level of cookery and, you know,
where is this
experience.
Thing? Yeah, keep going.
Makes it something that we think it's going to be, you know, or it's getting really popular here in the Austin area, which is cool because... Places like Pasta Bar, what Chef Michael is doing in Atari, say Toshokan. There's Otoko on South Congress. That is the same sushi, 10 seats style. And when I think about fine dining, at least here in Austin, I think a lot about Emerald Rye, Hestia.
Yes.
Which is, I think it's a style of cooking that they care for it. Mm-hmm. And they're just not trying to just throw everything on a plate.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, that's an incredible experience. Yeah. Like, that is fine dining.
You went to the tasting menu in Emerald Rye.
We did. I went with Chef Jack Bright over there. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun. We did that, but I mean, that's the move. Like, that's why I love what you're doing. Like, because you want to go, just get the tasting menu.
Yes.
Yes, you have to spend some money, but, like, it's going to be way better than picking a few things. And usually, for whatever reason, it always feels like, oh, I don't think this was on the menu. They sent it anyway. Yes.
Oh, yeah. And,
more custom.
Right. Yeah. And there's always, like, this treat that you think you're getting. And maybe you are, maybe you're not. Maybe it's an illusion, but they're like, they sent out an extra dessert.
And I feel like a lot of chefs that have that option in the restaurant, tasting menu-wise, feel a lot of pride over their tasting menu.
That would maybe be why, because you can kind of like pick up on that, right?
Exactly. And you can feel the intent on every dish instead of just trying to massively, you know, run food for the full restaurant. This is custom. This is thought. Portion size, and you're going through that rabbit hole of small plates, just tasting so many different things instead of just having three things.
Well, a menu like that requires a person who just like gives a shit. Like that's all it is. Like
to create it.
Like to make a menu like that. Like because you can make a menu and go to all these like you know fine dining steakhouses and someone's just back there cooking a steak.
Right.
And with these tasting menus, you've got every course that is carefully curated to like be what, you know, us as chefs want it to be and how we experience food.
Right.
So, I mean, it's really cool. I mean, how you're saying, like, you know, there's an attention to detail that's different from other places.
Well, and then it's dispersed in smaller amounts, so they need to kind of, like, shock and awe. Like, I mean, my favorite thing is, like, it's usually the first or second thing where you eat, and it's just like a flavor bomb.
Yes.
And you're, like, good for, like, 20 solid minutes. Like, you have this, like, in your palate's just, like, it's like a massage, and you're good to go, and you've got all these flavors dancing on your tongue, and
you remember
that's not easy. Oh, you remember,
right?
Yeah.
And that's a cool part. You're gonna go out and tell people about it because it's something to remember, and you want to go back to. And it was a great experience.
Have you heard the expression, it tastes like chicken? I want to tell you about the highest rated chicken farm in the South. Greener Pastures Chicken raises organic, pasture-raised birds in Elgin that the top chefs in Central Texas have been putting on their customers' plates like it's nobody's business. They're USDA certified organic, non-GMO project verified, real organic project certified, certified humane, and go Texan. They're in the final stages of becoming the first poultry farm nationwide to obtain regenerative organic certified status. You heard that right. They're humane, they're sustainable farmers, and they are the chicken of choice for the top chefs in Central Texas. For those of you who love to cook at home, you can pick up locally Greener Pastures Chicken at People's RX and Dias Market, or you can have it shipped to your home courtesy of farmhouse delivery. It doesn't just taste like chicken.
And you want to go back to, and it was a great experience.
Well, and that's like where I think going out to eat is, you know, you can just run and go out to eat, which is what most people think. But like, it can be similar to going to a movie or like going to a show. And I mean, there's amazing places all over the world where people understand that. But like, it's, this is a way to like, it, like if you get somebody who's invited to one of these dinners that you're doing, that doesn't normally do that or would never think about it, I mean, you open a whole nother world for them, right?
Exactly.
Because they're going to have an experience like they had never had before, potentially.
And at least on my side, my wife is someone like that. My wife, she
thinks food is food?
Well, she didn't know this whole tasting menu, Michelin star kind of world.
Well, it's also, you have to ease people that into it, because like $150.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
And it gets, yeah, gets pricey. Me and my wife or honeymoon did Manresa over in San Jose,
okay,
California, and that alone was just the tasting menu was $600 per person.
Between the two,
a person.
Gosh, holy so, yes, mackerel! Yes. You gotta tell those stories before it's, you yes, tell what you guys are trying to make. So you're getting a great deal here, guys. and that is so expensive. But does that include drinks?
It doesn't.
Oh my God, no. That is brutal.
Well, that doesn't include drinks. That doesn't include the plane accommodation.
Oh yeah,
and getting right there, right? So it was a trip to remember. We did a couple of different Michelin star places. That was the main kind of, and three Michelin stars are that experience. Is you are planning a trip to go to this three Michelin star place.
But your plan is to go eat.
Yes.
So you clearly got her on board. was that your honeymoon?
That was our honeymoon.
Because you're recently married. What, you've been married for what, 3 or 4 months?
Since September.
Okay.
And if I don't get it right, she'll probably kill
me. Time is flying. You do need to
Can we check the date on that?
Right. Put it as your password. Yeah. That way you're always in the clear. Right?
Yes.
When anniversaries. Right. You have to make that shift with people so they understand exactly what they're paying for. But does she love it?
She loves it. She complains a little bit because I now made her a lot. It's not, she's not a picky eater. She just now loves good food. And she knows what good food tastes like.
Yeah.
Because after all these tasting menus and like me cooking for her and all that kind of thing, it like opened her eyes to that sushi, all you can eat sushi, is not that, it was never that good.
Right. well, exactly, right? Like, so back to like culinary school and like the French technique, like doing that, and then you get introduced into like more Japanese style.
Yeah, so I got an offer to go stash at Robuchon over in Vegas because a chef that I work with in Park City, he was a sous chef at Robuchon. And then because of all my visa paperwork, I couldn't do it. And a friend offered me a job in this Japanese, like fine dining Japanese place down in Salt Lake City.
So how was that experience? Like your first time in that environment?
I didn't want to do it. I definitely Japanese cooking wasn't something that I wanted to do. But then when I started, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it because I really respect this guy that brought me here. And I'm just going to give it my all just in appreciation. And then I fell in love with Japanese cooking. I think that the Japanese just do it better.
Right. Well, I mean, like the cutlery itself speaks for that. What was your first experience with Japanese? Because like you think about it, they've got knife programs. That's not like what you think when you go to a kitchen, but like it's so important. And like there's probably a different level there absolutely is a different level of discipline.
Yeah, so my culinary experience with that was, I mean, I predominantly have only worked in the Austin area.
You're right.
So Uchi being the first place on the prep team there, it was scary, like going to go work there.
First place, like, was that what you did after, that was the first Japanese?
It was first place after culinary school. The first, like, Japanese place was a Korean barbecue. They did sushi.
Okay, so Uchi, wow, that's ambitious, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially right after culinary school. It was like that was every place they talked about. Every teacher talked about like that kind of place. Like, oh, that's
but how cool place to be, right? Because like especially then that time, right, 2014. I think even like no, that was like the peak. I feel like for Uchi, you know, there was no Uchi Co. right at that time. I don't believe so.
I think it was around. Yeah, Uchiko was around whenever I was there.
Just but there was like a real prime time where like Tyson Cole was really in the spotlight. And like that must have been fun.
But yeah it was crazy. I mean, going in the morning, I mean, just the energy the house itself has when you're there, the smells, like walking in the door.
Do you remember the peanut butter dessert?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do they still do that?
I don't know if they still do it, but it was, I believe, the peanut butter semifreddo, so the frozen good. Little. Yeah, so
that sounds really good.
Golden raisins. I think it had some type of like, I don't remember. Yeah, it was.
It was awesome. Like a peanut butter and jelly.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. It was ridiculous. But that, like, what a showstopper.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to, like, you know, like, there's certain things you're going to learn, like how to, like, you need to maintain your knife. You're not going to learn that in other places the same way you will.
Yeah. I mean, I worked at a hibachi place that was definitely very different because everyone there, you know, you're cutting on top of a metal table, like on this grill right. out there.
That's crazy.
No one, there wasn't any fine cuts. Like, it was like
right.
devein some shrimp, cube up some zucchini.
Yeah.
We're uchi. I mean, we're Brunoising things, we're, you know, doing smaller detailed cuts.
That's a word that people won't know what you're saying.
Brunoising.
Yeah. Well, making things, cutting things yeah. very small. Yes. Brunoising.
Yeah. All these things require technique, right? I mean, like.
And I guess that's the thing. Like, the hibachi place wasn't technique driven, where uchi was technique driven. And yeah. so with Japanese and French food, there's a lot of things that technique go behind. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's simple things like, I mean, another word like katsuramuki, which is like thinly slicing something with your knife. So, like, sheeting it out. Right. And a technique that I never thought I'd get good at. And every day I'm just progressing. I just practice that one thing all the time. So,
yeah.
And I think that's with technique and Japanese culture and French culture and French food, is we just want to strive to those small goals I was talking about earlier. Just, yeah. How do I get better at this?
Yeah, I may be wrong in saying something like this, but, like, when you think, like, French, the technique is more or less in, like, the execution of what you're combining and, like, the steps to make, like, your sauce. Where, like, and like I said, I don't know if I'm wrong or right, but, like, you've got a lot of knife work with what you guys are doing compared to, like, the French stuff, where the Definitely. Technique comes in there. Because, like, French, they're cutting things, they're throwing them in a pot, and they're saute. There's not, like, intricate things happening with knives. There are sometimes, yes. I'm saying.
I guess it just depends on the kitchen, too.
Yeah. I think that you can look at, you can go to French, really traditional places, and see that intricacy of what level of technique they're using right. in there. And that's what I think I at least helped me a lot in my career, where nowadays finding my own voice in my food, I combine a lot of those two different cuisines, which is a lot of French driven technique, sauce making, different type of how to develop flavor, and throw it in with Japanese technique and different ingredients from Japan.
So is that fusion? Like, is that what that...
I don't like
no,
call it fusion because I also...
Like, is that an old word that people don't use anymore? But, like, our uchi was like a fusion a little bit, right?
Didn't
people compare... It was sushi and something. I forget what.
I mean, there was cooked food, stuff, hot kitchen and, you know, sushi bar. And the food was just driven by Japanese techniques, but also Tyson Cole was, I believe, went to like the culinary school that was there as well here in Austin, but it was like French culinary. So, and a lot of what drove it was just making good food, and then sushi was the forefront of it.
I like that, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like the focus is actually good food.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, we don't need to put
label just developing on flavors.
Yeah,
and I think that the Japanese way and style of cooking is clean, is not too many ingredients, and just trying to create these amazing flavors out of one or two things, where the French will try to, you know, put the butter and the 25-hour broth sauce making,
right,
which will develop flavor.
Absolutely.
But when you combine the two of them, I think that you can create something really beautiful and something that people are not used to, but is making their way into the culinary world right now.
So what led you to want to work, like, for yourself, or, like, start your own thing, or even, like, the private chefing?
Right.
Because, like, I feel like that's, like, the, you know, you can work in a kitchen your entire life, your career, and progress and have a wonderful career. But like, I feel like I see some people, well, especially in this case, like, you know, stepping out and like, I really am attracted to the whole, the private chef gig. I think it's so cool. Number one, good money, right?
Yes.
Number two, the like extraordinary homes, because typically people ordering that are like spending a little bit of money. So they have a nice home. And then number three, it's like you can probably remember way more dinners than, like you're saying, you send it out, who knows? It was executed perfectly. I have no idea if they liked it. So it's like more intimate for you and right. fulfilling in that manner.
Yeah.
I mean, we're creating an experience for people, but that experience is created because I want to experience what's going to happen in that experience as well. Like, yeah. I'm also now, instead of like a restaurant, you're like day in, day out, go to work. You just go to someone's house. You get to experience how people are so inviting.
Yeah.
It's so great. I mean, like, oh, you want to drink after? Yes. Oh, you want to do this after? You want to hang out? So at a restaurant, they just go and leave.
Which policy on that? Do you just go with it? Do you pass? Do you indulge?
I mean, however things go while we're doing the dinner.
Right.
If they're like, oh, we want to, because it's typical with the sushi chef, like, oh, we want to drink with the sushi chef, like, oh, let's drink some sake with you. Yes,
totally.
And so if people were there, like if they're like, hey, do you want to drink with us or will you? Like, yeah, I mean, there's no...
Why not?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of some of the stories, I guess, if you want to say, I've heard is, you know, you go have this amazing... Plus, you're working for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. You have to prepare for the dinner on your own time, you know, with your standards. And then you get to go and, you know, like, yes, the whole thing.
You get to create.
Sounds, yeah.
You create, like... creativity, you know, side of the brain kind of goes up a lot, because in a restaurant, you're just cooking somebody else's food.
Yes.
And now you have to work towards what you think it's going to be good. Do it, taste it, and see how it goes.
Right.
Hopefully it's delicious.
Do you find that it's like a flooded a market, like with the private chefs? Because there was a time where it was almost unheard of and very boutique-y. Still is boutique, but like not as easy to find.
I think before it was more the personal chef style where someone like money. Like
someone who lives at the home or comes frequently.
Now I think like we're seeing this shift from people trying to leave the restaurant industry and trying to become
chefs. I'm saying. I feel like if people catch word, like work on your own schedule,
yes,
maybe make more money, do what you're passionate about, like everyone would be like, all right, 2 weeks.
Yeah, we're revealing a lot of secrets right now.
I just I just think that at least for both of us, Chef Michael and I, what I'm seeing is people are not paying their dues enough.
Okay, so that's the same thing that we were hearing with, like, people just bounce into culinary school. Like, you know, they're like, hey, we're going to go to culinary school. I'm going to be a chef.
Exactly.
Because they're seeing the tattoos and the rock star whole thing. But that was like, you know, people were saying it. And then you get somebody out of culinary school, their first gig, hey, hop in the dish pit. And they're like, what?
Yes.
I'm not going in the dish pit. But, like, that's the whole thing where, like, that should never be questioned. And there's a lot of crossover with, like, the – because private chef, you need to cut your teeth before you're like, I'm going to do this on my own, right?
You can't just go in someone, you know, pretty wealthy and sell an experience. Be and nice. Then it's yeah. it's not up to par because they've experienced.
I mean, they know.
They
know
people have been to places.
Can you imagine? How would that situation go, right? Exactly. Some total amateur. Well, like, embarrassing. Yeah. I mean, like, you could probably.
I can think of a couple of instances that I know of people not being able to par, and I'm just like, well, that's too bad because you just, you know, it's your name.
Right. Oh, so, and also, I mean, in Austin, reputation is everything because it's like, you know, small town, you know, kind of vibes, like everybody kind of knows everybody after a conversation. But also one of the cool things about these homes, right, is the kitchens are like, amazing. It's like, why don't I have this?
Oh my God.
Like we need
to see these places.
Right. Oh my God.
And better than some restaurants. And then you're there cooking and you're like, I wish I had this. Right.
You start visioning. Oh, yeah. I'll get this one day from my own house, and this little, you know, thing that you see, and you're like, I've never thought about it, and it's so smart.
Yeah, so kitchens are very cool,
and that's kind of the idea behind our kitchen that we're building in North Austin.
Was that the photo?
That's the photo I showed you. Yeah.
So send that to me. I'll put it on the Instagram post so someone listening can just look at what I'm talking about right now.
So like that idea was to be, you know, we're going to other people's homes. Like you're coming to our home because it's like in a little neighborhood. There, it's not like a bunch of restaurants. It's not in a strip. Like it's just a small little thing, second floor. And you go up and we built what we found from like a bunch of in-home kitchens. Just made it a little darker.
Yeah.
So like, you know, the wine fridge, the dry ager we're going to have in there. So like that just are visually appealing. When you walk into someone's house, you're like, dang, they got that range. Like,
right.
Like, whoa.
Well, that's cool because, like, all along, all your experience, you're, like, taking kind of note mentally of, like, what would be the best place to walk into. That's very cool. Like, the dry age, like, have you been to Cured in San Antonio?
I have not, no.
But that's, like, just to walk in there and you'll see what I mean. You don't even have to eat.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, eat. But, like, you know, it's gorgeous and they have things hanging and it's very cool. I mean, it's all about the atmosphere. I mean,
exactly.
That's half the battle.
You want to create an experience from the get-go. Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of Michelin star places create. You walk into a place that is completely different from the outside.
Yeah.
And you weren't expecting at all.
Right.
So you're just surprised from the get-go and you're just getting immersed into this experience. And you forget a lot about what's going on in your outside world. You know, you put your phone down, you kind of want to be there and focus on what you're eating and flavors. And you'll take the picture and the video or whatnot. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you're there for the food, for the experience. And that's what we're trying to create.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think that's... I mean, that speaks volumes when you're, because that's what it's like back to, like, you're not going to a movie and getting a text and, like, responding. I mean, maybe you are, but I'm saying you want to watch the movie.
Exactly.
And you can do that with food. So, pretty exciting. So, when is the collaboration dinner? Actually, well, yeah, tell me when it is, but I got to ask, because we're talking about experiences. I have a segment that we can pop into. When's the date of the dinner? Just curious.
We're doing it Wednesday the 22nd.
Of February. All the tickets already gone for that?
I think Wednesday, I think that dinner is going to be more so for our friends and things to come and try what we're doing, get some pictures, and then we're going to start marketing afterwards.
Are you going to do more than one?
We'll probably,
yes.
I mean,
that's the plan.
Assume a couple before our restaurant opens.
Okay, cool.
You know, we've got Texas Sake, their venue, we're able to utilize the space. It's a really awesome space in the yard. And they're closed on Wednesday nights right now. So we're able to, you know, go in, have access to sake. I'm purchasing, you know, a bunch of different sakes in. We have beer, wine, and sake.
Nice.
But for the most part, I think the focus is like the food paired with really good sakes. Because last week I ordered like 30 different bottles from like 4 different purveyors, all carefully sourced for a sake class we did.
Nice.
And so I think with the food that he's preparing and what we've got, like, and the food that we're also developing together, we'll probably do quite a bit, hopefully some more, and some bigger ones as well.
Yeah. So that is, this is jump-starting it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sweet. So the segment is, we have a name for it, like your favorite bathrooms. Potty Talk, Potty Talk.
This,
yes. The segment is called Potty Talk, sponsored by Buc-ee's, checks in the mail. They just don't know it. So when you're building a, this is an interesting question for both of you, but favorite restrooms you've been into around Austin, but like, I would say you can also include homes.
Okay.
Because you might have been in some like crazy homes.
Back in Utah, there's my friend owns a bar and his bathroom in the bar is more famous than more like a lot of places in Utah.
Really? What's the name of the bar?
Alibi. It's Alibi, Salt Lake City.
Okay.
And
that's like Buc-ee's. They're famous for their bathroom.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, this place has an insane following on Instagram.
So it's an Instagrammable bathroom.
It's insane.
Which is a thing now.
Yes.
Right? When you're building your bathroom space, do I want to take a selfie in here?
Exactly. So I think like the first time I heard this segment from you, I totally thought about this. I taken a picture of it.
Right.
So people just uploaded it.
Yeah.
And you can see yourself taking selfies or, yeah. I mean, it's not even just a selfie. You see groups of people just going into the bathroom to take a picture. What
is it about the bathroom?
The whole wallpaper and the whole aesthetic of the bathroom is just really
cool. What's on the wallpaper?
I can't remember. I moved to Austin 3 years ago, a little bit over 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And he just opened. So this Instagram was like starting off when I left Salt Lake City, and now I see it. Like, I mean, I follow it on Instagram. It's so funny.
The this started because of Old Thousand.
Okay.
Yes. Their bathroom. That's why we were like, we should just start asking about bathrooms because they got like Biggie on the wallpaper and stuff. The one on the east side. I've not been to the bathroom on the one on Burnett. I think it's on Burnett. But yeah, that's why it started. You know, it's a big thing you got to consider because it's like you can go two directions nowadays. You can go all in and make an Instagrammable bathroom, or you just have to have a complete full blown shit hole,
right?
Where it's like they remember it because of how nasty it was. They'd be like, oh, there was this one bathroom where you had to like step over a dead body. And, like, yeah. What about yourself?
I mean, in town, in Austin, I think Emmer and Rye has a really cool restaurant, like restroom, like podcast going.
Podcast. Like, so when we went there,
okay.
Obviously I walk in and I'm like, and I walk out of the bathroom. I'm like, hey guys, isn't there supposed to be a culinary podcast playing right now? And they were like, there's no podcast? And I was like, no. And I was like, I wanted to experience this. Like, there's cool. Like a culinary podcast. What is it? Is it Bon Appetit?
I don't know which one it was. I mean,
Austin
but just going in there and like, I was like, wait, what are they talking about right now? Like, okay. And then you're like hanging out in the restroom listening to the podcast. Like, oh, shit, I got to go to dinner. Like,
right, it's like, get it. This guy's like,
yeah, that scared me.
Yeah, he scared you. I'm get out of the bathroom. It's yes. Like time to go. This guy, I wonder when he'll see guard dog mascot, yes. The whole thing. I guess we know we're safe.
Yep.
But yes, Emmer and Rye has a cool, and they're all individual, right?
Yes.
That's a nice thing that like you don't see a lot of, but that's what you want, some privacy.
Right.
Close the door. You can't see somebody's feet in the next stall.
Right? Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, if you're willing to drop a deuce, I think you've made a successful bathroom.
Right.
Because most you're going to steer clear of that situation.
Yes.
And just hope we're not in that situation anyway. But yeah, back on to our normal pod. That is our we have two segments here. We'll get into the other one.
Nice.
But so this is going to start on the 22nd. It's going to be friends, kind of family type deal. And then the plan will be to continue it, just as frequently as you can. But then you're opening, and then you're planning on opening.
Yes. Right now, me and my wife just closing the door on the house. So we're kind of building on that and try to get that going. But, you know, like, just moving, it's kind of like a bomb exploded in both of our places right now.
But, like, you're moving outside of the city, which is kind of like a relief, right?
Yeah, it's nice. We're going to be in Manor, Texas.
Well, whereabouts are you?
Oh, William Cannon, right around the corner from
here. Oh, okay. You're South Austin.
So, I mean, it's not a bad drive. I know it's a 20-minute drive from downtown Austin. To our home.
Yeah, I feel like I hear people like when they get to leave Austin, it's like the air's different. Like it just, because there's a lot of stuff. Yes. There's a lot of hustle and bustle happening.
Well, I always lived in big cities. Yeah. I went from the second biggest city in the world, Mexico City, I lived in Vancouver. And then moving to Salt Lake City, Park City was kind of like a shock move for me because, you know, going from like 23 million people in Mexico City to...
How many are in Salt Lake?
I think the whole metropolitan area is like 2 million.
Oh, yeah.
It's like nothing.
What is the population up to here? Any idea?
I could not tell you.
Yeah.
No idea.
Well, it's grown quite a bit. I mean, you've been here... How many years have you been here from Corpus?
in the area for about 10, in Austin around 7, 8.
Yeah, it's so you've seen a lot of grows. How long have you been?
In Austin, I've been a little bit over 3 years, I believe. Something this like that.
Can't be right. It says under a million?
That might be just the Austin area. Not counting anything, you know, like Pflugerville, Round Rock, or yeah, any of that kind of stuff.
That's crazy. It's also a little dated. It might be a little over a million, but like...
Feels like a lot more.
Oh, my God. It absolutely... Like, my daughter goes to school, and like, if you drive there now, and, you know, after the morning rush has settled, we're talking 4 minutes.
Right.
But if you leave, you know, the watch is telling you this crazy stuff, how long it's going to take to get to work or the phone.
Yeah.
It tells me it takes me 16 minutes to get to that 4 minute drive, which is, it's just so funny because it is so close.
Right.
You could run there in 16 minutes, but like it takes 16 minutes to drive there. So there's so many people here and it's not built for this kind of, you know, to have this many people. But you ever notice when you're driving and it feels like awful and there's so much traffic, it still only takes 20 minutes.
It is, yeah. It never and that's takes, the beauty of at least where Distrito is going to be at. Just, it's 20 minutes from downtown. Yeah. It's not a bad drive. It's not, you're not, you know, going out of your way.
Where it is again already?
Maynard, Texas?
No, where Distrito? Oh.
It's going to be in my home.
It will be.
It will be inside.
I'm sorry. Okay. That's right. Yours will be in your actual
exactly.
home. It's 20 minutes, not bad. And that's right. I have a table for you to see.
Right. Yeah, we're talking about that.
Yeah. Did you tell Chef Michael?
No, yeah. No.
I have a table. Ironically, like, I had a co-host, Chef Danny, who's real busy doing other stuff, but he's in the private chef game. And we started after we were doing these in the evenings and we started making, like, treating our guests. Like, we'd be like, after this, and we'd be getting all, like, having some ranch riders right now in the evening, and then go downstairs and we'd have a couple things that were already working and we'd fire off a dinner. And we went down a rabbit hole. We got this huge table from the guest, like a guest service place in like Steiner Ranch or somewhere. Yeah. But this huge table, and it's so big, but we never really continued to do that. But it would have been a lot of fun to keep doing that. But
we'll look at that table.
Oh, I think you're going to really like that table. And I would be honored to be able to have it go and be used for experiences like that.
And that's the whole, you know, the premise is you come into my actual home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my wife is going to be there, and we're going to sit down in our living dining room, and you're going to have the chef, you know, prep your food and plate your food, which is something that at least it's another nugget, like golden nugget in there in this type of experience that you usually don't see in larger or more developed restaurants, which I think it's a crucial part of what we're doing. I think Chef Michael and I, people that take pride on something so basic that is like going out to the grocery store or the farm to pick up the produce. And you're having that raw produce and prep the produce. And it's not just, you know, your five prep cooks give them the produce and tell them what to do. You're actually doing the job yourself. And I think that talks a lot about what we're trying to create, because not every restaurant will have that. Or most restaurants, I feel like over 90% of the restaurants won't have the chef owner always at the restaurant prepping your food, buying and plating.
Well, you're like the volume, whole right? Like they can't make it all, right? You got to have cooks with their hands doing all kinds of stuff. But
and I think that once you get into the level that we're trying to get, into this fine dining place, I think that it becomes more of like you want that person. You're paying for that experience of having the chef there as well. And at least when I went to my restaurant, you know, like I said, me and my wife paid $600 each. Like,
yeah. What's it going to cost to go to your house?
Any idea?
You have a price? Yeah.
$200.
Okay.
$200?
Yeah, that's...
I don't think that's...
Too bad, right?
Yeah.
And we're making it BYOB.
That's cool too.
Wine only.
Like, guy shows up with like a case of Bud.
I mean,
he's like, oh, tickets were expensive. So
we've done a dinner where someone pulled up. He got invited to it. And then we were at their house and he pulls in with, you know, his case of Coors Light. He's like, I don't drink that sake. I'm okay. I got my Coors Light. Cracks it open. We're doing like courses of sashimi and stuff. And he's just like,
really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He loved it. I mean, he loved the food, but it was just funny.
That is hilarious. Like, it's like totally doesn't make sense, right? Yeah. It's like, how are you drinking that?
Something that's really funny that when I met my mentor, Viet Pham, back in Salt Lake, okay, I helped him open his project, his restaurant called Pretty Bird, which is a fried chicken place.
Oh, nice. I like that name too.
It comes from Dumb and Dumber movie.
Really?
Because there's a scene where the little kid on the wheelchair and he's just petting the bird. Pretty Bird.
Okay.
Right? And they filmed that scene right around the corner of the first location of Pretty Bird in Salt Lake.
That was a good movie.
Yes. Dumb and Dumber is really good.
Yeah.
And
Swanson?
We would only have PBR at the restaurant. And he comes from all these fine dining places. But
there's something about that, right? And, like the local beer or whatever it is, and that's it.
Well, and he would always say the cheaper the beer, the better it pairs with fried chicken.
Okay.
And people were like, I want this, you know, hand crab. And we're like, no, we have PBR.
Right. I need this 9% IPA from Portland. And like, they're like, no, you're going to get the Lone Star.
There's a thing when people crack open, you know, Budweiser and kind of stuff that.
Yeah. I was really into, it's weird because like we were talking about coffee before you had gotten here. And like, I only drink black coffee, but when somebody has like a nice creamy looking coffee, I'm like, that looks delicious. But like I was getting into all these crazy IPAs, and when somebody would just be drinking Lone Star, I was like, that'd be nice life. It seems a lot simpler just to be able to drink Lone Stars. But I was like,
it's my go-to beer. It's usually what I'm drinking.
So you're a Lone Star guy.
I drink Lone Stars. Yeah.
So I like admire that because I would be like, well, we need to look at these. And it's like $12 for six of them. You know, what are you going to get? You're going to get, you know, how many Lone Stars can you get? Lone Stars is, that's actually a little pricier, right, than it used to be.
Depends on where you're going, I guess. Definitely. At that point. But, Lone Star and a shot of Fernet, like $10. Like,
good to go.
Easy. Yeah. Let's go.
I mean, I feel like that's like a simple life, right? I was complicating things with all these crazy, breweries and IPAs. But fun little world. It is a fun world. So this $200 for a ticket, that sounds nice. You got the ride out there. I mean, that does sound like a good experience. And whoever was saying it is not wrong that you need to. Was it your sister?
So my sister's running the social media and the kind of marketing
side of it. Like, I'm looking at the Instagram and you've got some posts like alluding to your opening and whatnot. But like the whole, we're in this day and age where like you have to have that like real, like, do you have TikTok? Do you guys both have it?
My sister's planning, you know, on me making videos. And
what are your thoughts on this? Because like this is, like there are business owners that like, take time out of their day to like go through TikTok and spend an hour or two to see what's going on.
Right.
I think there's something to that because like I feel like such an old person when I'm talking to younger people and I've missed something that was viral or whatever. See, I already feel old when I start talking about shit like this.
I know you didn't want to say it. You're like, viral?
Well, I don't even know.
Can I say that?
I don't even know if that's I don't know if that's a bussin' word. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? There's all these like my kid was saying like, gnar, right? Have you heard this? Like, instead of just saying no, this is like gnar. But that's like a thing. And I thought she was just saying it. And then I started seeing like these, like, it was like a parody on like these kids, like talking about like being busting. And they were like, gnar. Okay. And I was like, oh, gnar is like a thing. So there's all this stuff going on. But like, are you both on, or you, I understand, are like being encouraged to get on this?
Yes.
But it's something I feel is needed, right? Chef Tony, Gathering Forage, he's fully aware. He's a big...
Between him and, Ryan, they're really into...
I don't get on there. I'm bad. Like, I... Or do you?
I mean, not TikTok specifically, but other social media platforms we use.
So I had heard that like Instagram Reels are like, because you'll get stuck watching those. I'm sure everybody has at this point. But like that is like there's like fresh stuff happen on TikTok, and then the old people are watching the Instagram Reels to see what happened 2 weeks ago. So you're kind of out of the loop. But it's so fast and so changing that like I just find it absolutely insane.
Sometimes I feel like it's hard to keep up with.
Well, it is. Like I said, I know people who actually devote like time to scrolling through, which seems silly. It seems like something you try to avoid, but they're actually going to it to see what people are into. But there's a lot of stuff you can...
There's a lot.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of crap, but I think there's things that you can like pick up on and learn. Mm. And I mean, actually, I was told by Tony, he believes that that's like the place people are going to go to. Because when I think, oh, I want to see what you guys are doing, I'm on Instagram. Because I want to see the pictures and like, you know, like you can read the description, but like Facebook is like old people stuff or like.
And that's my train of thought too. But my sister is like.
But is she saying TikTok?
She's saying TikTok. Let's get on TikTok because that's where you're going to bring following to the Instagram. And I'm like, okay, I can see that. I just need to start filming myself or something, which is not.
Yeah.
Easy for anyone.
I think it's almost like thinking of TikTok as your like business partner because they're like, hey, we'll put it in people's faces. Mm-hmm. Just give us the video and then you have to create videos.
Right.
But you're also using Instagram and whatnot for Texas, for Tari, yeah?
Yes.
And that's, that is your own spot, yeah? Do you have a chef you work with over there?
At Texas Sushi Co.?
Yeah.
So at Texas Sushi Co., we have it's fully staffed. We have 3 people there who run it. I'm there daily. Like I'm going there right after this as well.
Do you remember Inari? Am I thinking the right place? Was that there too?
Yes.
Do you know Chef John?
I do not.
Okay. So that was before. He was there for a brief time. Okay. I wanted to make sure it was the right place, but I was like, I'm pretty sure there's only one Texas, you know, sake at the Yard.
Yes.
Which, by the way, let's just briefly touch on the Yard, and that experience within itself is amazing, right? Because you can go there and, like, do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I mean, you can start on one end and go to St. Elmo Brewery, get some, you know, beer.
Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
I don't think he goes under the chef. But he's got the Hop Water. Hop Water's awesome.
Yeah, and then you've got Still Austin that's right there.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing barrel releases, like parties. You've got Huckleberry. Chef Davis is back there.
Oh, that's right. He moved there. He's good people.
He's on to some good stuff there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then...
The pizza, there's a vegan pizza spot that's good.
It's Little Nona's. Not
bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the garlic knots are amazing.
Yeah.
You've got the Austin Winery that's right there. Local craft wine.
That's cool. Isn't there a Tesla deal thing?
Tesla's there? Right there as well.
What are the? Is it just a dealer?
I think it's like a showroom.
Okay.
And a service center.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's always a bunch. It makes me really not want a Tesla because they're all broken when they're there.
is like, that how it is?
And it takes like 6 people to push a Tesla. I watched the guys like push
because the battery's so heavy.
I guess. But
well, it's like a Beamer. Like the BMWs. It's all like proprietary stuff too. So it's like really expensive to keep up with it. So yeah. Well, there you go. Idea. I'll edit that out so Elon doesn't ever come in and not want to eat at your establishment.
Yeah.
Right. He'll be like, no, not that guy. No, he seems pretty cool though. But yeah, the Yard is like this great spot that you can like, make your way from one end to the other. And there's all kinds of other like random stuff in there, right? There's like, are there shops in there? Am I remembering?
No, there's not. Everything is kind of like a distillery or brewery type thing. The only thing that's
wasted when you go there.
Yeah. The only thing that's not really like a distillery or brewery is still like a seltzer company. Like they don't make anything there. It's just like their warehouse. But they have events. They do like Blue Norther.
What's the whiskey?
Well, Still Austin.
That is. Okay. Same place though, right?
So Blue Norther is a seltzer company. And they're in the Yard as well. And they host parties. They're open. Their tap room. They have events, live music, local artists, you know, pop-up markets type thing in their space.
Totally.
So that itself brings like other people in because... You know, like you were saying, if there's other markets and whatnot, it's more so just market days happen at the yard. Like the Austin Flea happens, it's still Austin.
Yeah. Cool spot. St. Elmo Brewing. That's awesome. So, okay, last segment here is favorite places. What are you eating? Where are your go-to spots? I mean, we know what you guys are pushing here, but like when you go out with your lady or whenever you're going out, where do you guys go to?
So, let's see. I think like and it's a pasta bar, is a hard reservation to
you
get.
You've mentioned a couple already, yeah.
MRI, Hestia, yeah. Kanji, I think it's absolutely fantastic. Oh,
that's all like the same family,
that's MRI,
right?
Family, yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Have you ever been to Entero?
I've been.
Well, I was going to say with the when you started talking about the chocolate.
Yeah, the little Kristen. Bonbons.
Uh-huh.
The place.
Ethan, so, right?
Yes.
In Kristen, and they're a riot. But that's a cool spot. It.
Yeah.
And you don't have to wait like pasta bar.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there once. It was really good.
Yeah.
It was really, really good.
And that's like a place like the east side is so congested in a good way with just a bunch of like everywhere you, because I can't remember what street that's on. Oh, that's
Cesar
on like,
Chavez.
Is it on? Because like there was used to be Myers over there.
Because Juliet's there
and Juniper.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And yes. Just so many good.
Yeah, Mongers
places.
Used to be there.
And Mongers is now because Minamoto, he would buy stuff. From,
yeah. So Mongers is up off 45th and Guadalupe area.
Yeah.
It's huge, like difference between like where it was before and where it's at now.
Well, do you remember
the old Vino? Yeah.
Yeah. That was. Way more appropriate because all the wine, and now it's just this long, Mongers.
Yeah,
but it's still very cool. Like I love it. And oh my God, what is his name?
Shane. Yeah.
Oh my God, can't forget Shane. Like Hawaiian shirt, sandals, Austin. Right.
He's awesome.
He definitely looks like he needs to be on a pier in Florida. Right?
Fishing all the time. Yes.
That is Shane. And like at all times, right?
I'm sure if he could be, he would be.
Yeah. And I kind of like he plays the role. Like definitely he will go down and my mind is like.
Damn. And he's there at his kitchen. Like he's working. Oh, dude, he's working the line. You go in there.
And his wife is like helps run the place too.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, look up to people like Shane and his wife because like Danielle, my girlfriend, and I were opening Tare Austin, like doing that. And you see people like them. Yeah. And then Arturo over here doing his venture with his wife. I mean, it's in his home. That's crazy. that's kind of just what I'd like to have as our restaurant. Like where, you know, the team is there.
Yeah.
But to get back to like places to go, like Entero to eat and also like Entero to go eat date night type of thing.
Yeah.
But Little Darling is awesome. Their food is great.
Because you're
William Cannon. Close to me, yeah.
Yeah. But that's also good food. People don't know.
Yeah.
Some people know. But people don't. You don't think that. But the atmosphere of Little Darling is like quintessential Austin type of deal. Like if you were coming in visiting, you know, some people are like, we got to go to the Salt Lick and we got to check out the Capitol. But if you really want to get what you should go to like Little Darling and get a Lone Star.
That's, I mean, people usually ask at the end of the dinner, is like, oh, where do you eat or what places do you go? I mean, conversations come about other places to go eat. And it's like, honestly, after this dinner, I'm probably going to go eat at Little Darling. They're open until 2 a.m. and I can eat a chicken sandwich or a burger. Like,
that's and awesome. It's great. Yes. Like, it's all outdoors. Have you been over there?
I haven't.
How do you describe? Because they're not unique. There are other places, but it's outdoors.
Backyard bar. Really great food.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you'll see a bunch of like bikers out there. You'll hear like you know metal music playing. But and then during the day on a Sunday, you'll have people eating brunch with their kids running around. I've seen birthday parties thrown there for like 3-year-olds. I'm like, what are they doing here? Like,
well,
the backyard's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and I've heard that. I've had people come in and I'm like bringing my daughter, but we're going to like a outdoor brewery. And people are like, what? You're bringing your kid? And I'm like, oh, yeah, there's a playset. Like, and it's like a thing. And that's not like that everywhere. You think definitely like brewery 21 and up type deal or a bar, but like, yeah, brunch, bar, kids running around. Why not?
That's cool.
The best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you ever have a kiddo.
I won't make my.
And they do pop-ups and stuff there as well. I mean, I think they did one with Philip Spears a while back where they cooked like a whole goat or something.
That's fun. Chef Philly, you're a fan of him.
Yeah.
I was good friends. Cleaning this stuff up and I found the
mess. Yeah. I have three of these. We're talking about the mice and plus his
a journal.
His journal.
Didn't he come out with something else too?
So yeah, the mushroom, the pre-shift and post-shift mushroom powder. It's awesome too. I bought the pre-shift.
And you go you do the run club.
Yeah, sometimes. not as much anymore. But I was really consistent with it for a whole year, something like that. And that's where I started meeting a lot of really cool people in the industry and even outside the industry.
Yeah.
But got into a really cool relationship with, Chef Philip, James from Fix.
Okay.
And other people.
I've heard he's got great fried chicken.
He has great, great stuff. The cinnamon rolls over there are absolutely amazing.
Yeah. The, now that the mushroom water, because I started doing that mud water.
I think we talked about it.
I forgot. So I have awful memory because I forgot we talked about that. But yeah, that's how's the his product.
It's good. It's great. I think. He talks a lot about how that helped him reduce his coffee intake.
Well, so we did talk about this and because, I was like, I like drinking coffee. I don't want to quit drinking. Yeah.
And I'm not gonna stop drinking coffee, but that's a little boost that I take with me, and I kind of combine the mushroom powder and then the greens. And then kind of do my green mixture there, and then a little bit of protein powder for the vanilla flavor.
Yeah,
and just take it for the morning, that kind of thing, and it's great. It helps a lot.
That's like common, like a drink like that in the morning for like some vitamins and some energy. I'm a sucker for like tea in the evening or something, and then they have the mushroom. There's like a rest one, and so I like that. It's kind of like a warm. It's like soothing. I don't know if it's actually.
And mushrooms are on the upcoming, so there's a lot of mushrooms.
Like High Mycology. He's been on here.
Okay.
And that was amazing. And he does all kinds of tinctures and stuff like that. But are you working with any mushrooms on what you guys are working on? Because you should, right?
I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, I use like a lot of oyster mushrooms for the most part. They're real versatile. Tastes like meat when you cook it right.
Yeah.
But I think ours mainly run through like specials and like things like that, small, like on the food truck aspect of it. And then when we cook, it's kind of falls into place with, being a nigiri piece or a crudo itself. Cause even mushrooms like sous vide and then like thinly sliced and sous vide can be a really cool like vegetarian crudo.
Yeah. Never had a sous vide mushroom. Sounds good.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love to work with mushrooms. Been doing it for a while, especially with, back in Utah, there's a lot of foraging. Some of my good friends are big foragers, so they will bring out mushrooms to a restaurant and we just cook with them.
My friends found crazy to think you can run out and that High-Five Mycology guy does that every day. He goes somewhere.
It's awesome. I mean, if you know how to do it, I mean, you gotta be real careful out there with that kind of stuff.
Oh, right, because you like learn when you're growing up, like don't eat that, you die. You don't know, so you just like I'm not eating anything.
So you have to know about it. But it's a cool world, like the whole mushroom. I like to do a lot of us. Right.
That's crazy. Yeah, get some cordyceps.
Good luck. Well, it is. I got into eating mushrooms more frequently, not like what I'm doing with the mud water, but like the psychedelic mushrooms are like, you kind of like feel connected to everything in a way.
Right.
But like, I was like, I wonder if like mushrooms are just like that. And then I was eating them and then Phil released that book and then he has like little logos.
Yeah.
And I was like, I started seeing like mushrooms. I was like, I wonder if like there's something more to this.
There's a lot of, I think that the next big trend is mushroom.
Like it's could coming. Also just be, no, Jason, there's no connection. Yeah. It's just fucking trending right now. So you're seeing it everywhere.
I mean, I think it's going to get bigger.
Oh yeah. For a good reason too. Yeah. And you can grow them at home.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
They sell the little big pouches, or that you can grow the right. the mushrooms on your house.
Totally.
And there's a company here in Austin that moved here, or they opened the second location. It's indoor mushroom growing. They started up back in New York.
Oh, like a farm?
Exactly.
It's a
farm that it's
like
indoor.
A shared space. Like you could get a plot in there and grow your
own
mushrooms?
No. So this is their own product.
Okay.
But it's all grown indoors and no soil or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But they started in New York and they go really big. And
what's the name of that? No,
I can't remember. Yeah. I think it's the same people that takes them over to, and I'm pretty sure it is to Central Market.
Oh, that is so cool too. Yeah. People don't know whenever I take a picture of that little like Central Market display,
right? The mushroom display.
Where the hell are you? And I'm like, well, it's like it's under everybody's backyard.
They put it in there.
Yeah, is that that's the company?
That's the company. I'm pretty sure I'll have to ask.
I'm like, that's like one of my favorite things. I mean, you're there shopping for people once a week. I'm getting coffee at Central Market. That's like my favorite thing to do.
Plus, Central Market's great.
Oh, it's the best. It is the best. But I guess we can get wrapped up. We have been going for a solid minute here. I appreciate you coming out.
Appreciate it.
Always welcome to come back. I mean, if you ever get this up and going, you got something to bring your wife in.
Right.
You know, why not? I always extend an invitation to come back in. I encourage that. It's always so much fun when people have been here and come back, so I'm not just saying it. It's not like
this is fun.
Yeah, I'm not being nice. But appreciate both of you being here and this will go up soon.
Cool. Stay in the lookout. Yeah. We'll post pictures of the dinner party that we're doing.
Totally. Cool. Well, thank you guys.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.